In the hold below, make second and third decks. I am now bringing the floodwaters over the earth to destroy everything under the sky that breathes. Everything on the earth is about to take its last breath. But I will set up my covenant with you. You will go into the ark together with your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives. From all living things, from all creatures, you are to bring a pair, a male and female, into the ark with you and keep them alive. From each kind of bird, from each kind of livestock, and from each kind of everything that crawls on the ground, a pair of each will go in with you to stay alive. Take some of every kind of food and stow it as the food for you and for the animals. Noah did everything exactly as God commanded him. The word of God for the people of God.
So this morning we are beginning a new message series. The title of it is Faithfulness. And we're going to be looking at four Old Testament or Hebrew Bible characters and their stories and see if we can't figure out how to emulate the faithfulness that they are an example of in their lives. So you think about Noah as a character who faced a mighty task, Job as someone who faced total loss in his life, Ruth, a person who faced desperation, and Nehemiah, the one who faced opposition. We're going to entertain these four characters over the next 4 weeks, listen to their story, and learn from their faithfulness. You think about this morning and the table that's behind me and how this represents lives that, for many of us, are people of great faith. They've handed on something to us, a tradition, a life of value, a life that believed in something. And sometimes that belief was visionary. It was something that was so much bigger than maybe we could even conceive or understand. And we take from that moment of remembrance, hopefully, a seed within each and every one of our own hearts of what it could mean for us to be faithful people who live beyond ourselves in a visionary kind of capacity. To be able to reach for something in our lives that we may not fully grasp or understand today, to think about that mighty task that God might have in mind for us as His people here on Ward Parkway. As a kid, I grew up building models. You know, those models that you used to go to the store, you could buy them in a box, you took them home, you took them out of the box, you separated all the little pieces, then you unfolded the instructions, and you put it together piece by piece in order. I remember that my dad had a set of X-Acto knives. You guys know what X-Acto knives are, right? And I was messing around with one of them, trying to shave a little piece of plastic off of one of them, and I cut my finger right here. Tried to take my finger off with the X-Acto knife. It cost me 5 stitches in my finger. Cost my dad the copay at the ER, if you think about it, the little visits, you know, the things that go along with that. The other thing that, if you remember correctly, that you had to do was you used testers, cement for plastic models, to put your model together, right? My brother and I used to do that in our room, which was a fairly small, enclosed space. You know where I'm going with this, right? Testers, cement, glue. It was the getting high before you even knew what getting high meant, because it had that peel to it, and you actually would succumb to some of the fumes off of it. If you read the backside of it, it actually said, number one, do not use near a flame, and number two, use in an open space. We also built what was a little control called U-Control airplanes. Any of you ever build one of those? You know, it was a small little airplane that had an Ott-49 engine that you mounted to it, a small little prop engine that ran on fuel. You could start it up, and when you got it going the right direction, the engine going the right direction, you could launch your little airplane, and it was on these two long lines with a handle that you could control this way to make the elevator go up and down. And then you just spun around and around and around watching your airplane as you flew it. You could do tricks and all kinds of stunts with these little aircrafts. My brother and I would build those and rockets and all these kinds of things. Now, the nice thing about those were they came with a fairly simplistic set of instructions that young boys could go through, put it together, and operate fairly safely. Some of you know these kinds of things in your life. You know what it is to do some things that are fairly simplistic. You learn the instructions. Either you read them or somebody gives you an oral set. You pick up a hobby or a habit and you begin to emulate that in your life. And over you do these things and you perfect them. And you see the end results time and time again. At other times in our lives, though, we participate in things where we may not see the big picture of what's transpiring around us. We may not have the skill or the capacity to understand fully what is transforming and taking place before us. Some of you that are in certain professions where you know what it is to build something of a great scale and yet you only have a small little piece of that in your design or your implementation of it. You may not be able to see the full vision, but you have moments and pieces where you can conceive of these kinds of things. I remember years ago, my dad bought a model of the USS Constitution. How many of you have ever been to Boston Harbor and walked on the decks of the USS Constitution that's there? My dad had a model of it. For us boys, the instruction booklet was way too complicated. We couldn't conceive of what it took to be able to put that together. It was a task beyond us. Sometimes I think that's the way it is with the stories that we read and the understandings of what it's trying to draw out of us as a community of faith, is that we get glimpses of what God is doing in these stories. We understand that God is calling people to these mighty tasks that maybe we can't understand or fully grasp. And yet all of us know that God wants to continue that even here. To call us as a church, a community of faith, to something grander than just ourselves and what we're doing in this very moment. To hear the instructions, oral or written, the concept, the calling, to come. You know, the story of Noah is one of those complex biblical stories. It's a story that tells us about God doing something with a man. It draws him into a world, an environment, an opportunity that's beyond his comfort level, maybe beyond his skill level, even as a farmer. Yet God delivers to him the instructions to come and do a mighty task, build an ark, a great big huge ark, that would save his family, parts of creation, and parts of husbandry. And that the Hebrew writers, they tell us this story, even though they find themselves in a competing environment of flood stories around them. They tell a story about a particular God who calls a particular hero. And this is for a particular purpose. When we review the story of Genesis, I always find it fascinating that when we review the story of Genesis, that creation could so quickly devolve. From Genesis chapter 1, God's good creation, all is well in the world, to Genesis chapter 6, everything's gone awry. Right? Pretty short narrative there of what transpires. But in this story, we learn some things. We learn some things about humanity at that time. We learn some things about God, about Noah. And hopefully out of that, we also learn some things about ourselves as well. The story tells us that humanity at this time was wicked and rebellious. They had rebelled against all of God's ways. It's 10 generations after paradise is lost, or about a millennia or so. Human rebellion and evil has gone unchecked. It is pervasive in the world, and God is distraught over this. Humanity has turned their back on God and God's ways. This has devolved down not only for humanity but also into creation. All of creation is perverse according to the Scriptures. And God sees His good creation in total disarray, and God is grieved and God regrets. What an interesting way to conceive of God. God regrets the making and creating of humanity and the world. And because God's heart is broken over this, God says that I will destroy all things, and then pauses and says, well, maybe I'll destroy almost everything. save Noah and his family, this man named Noah. And so God decides that it's time for something new to transpire. The story tells us that humanity has turned its back on God, and it tells us that God is one who creates and destroys. That God is one who judges and yet saves. That God is one who has turned his back upon this creation and yet remembers. The story teaches us that God's purpose wasn't the demise of humanity and creation, but rather the cleansing and the restoration of both of them. For water symbolizes the cleansing of evil that was pervasive in this time, and the ark symbolizes the deliverance that God has in mind. Noah becomes this person encapsulated in this story that shows the potential that every single one of us have of participating in what God is doing, these mighty acts of God's salvation. The flood story tells us about a perverse humanity, a God who, in this moment, his love is prevailing and finding a way to restore, and about a man that he calls to participate in this. According to Scriptures, Noah was the fourth person in Scriptures to have walked and talked with God. I find that to be an interesting understanding of Noah, having this personal relationship with God who is holy and above, as one who walks and talks with God. Of course, we know that the first two people to walk and talk with God were... Are you sure? It's a rhetorical question. It was Adam and Eve, right? And the third person, according to Scriptures, was a man named Enoch. Very short little synopsis in the story about him. And now it says that Noah is a man who walks and talks with God. The English term that we use in our translation is that Noah was a righteous man. A God who was righteous before God. And if you think about the understanding or the definition of righteous means someone who is morally upright or justifiable, someone who acts in an upright or moral way. Righteousness implies a more privatized kind of faith expression. So you could literally be moral and righteous and live on an isolated island all by yourself, because it's a concept of how we internalize these kinds of understandings. One commentary suggests that maybe we should read this understanding of Noah in a different way, that we should read it from a Spanish translation, because the Spanish use the word just or justice instead of righteous. That Noah was a just man, a man who lived in a relationship with a community that was around him, a person who practiced not only private justice, but also public justice with those. If you think about justice, it is not something that you can live out in your own personal life in private on an island. Justice implies communal. It implies relationship with others. It involves others to practice justice in your life. And so if you think about the reason that God calls Noah to this grand, mighty task is that Noah walks and talks with God. Noah is a just man in the world around him. And Noah is an example of faith lived out personally and socially. The flood story tells us about our corrupt nature as humanity, the mission of God to cleanse and restore, the calling of a just and righteous man named Noah who walked with God. And from that, hopefully, it tells us a little bit about ourselves as well. The story should remind every single one of us that we are also called by God to be a part of something that's visionary, that is grand, that may be beyond our comprehension, our ability to understand and fully conceive, just as Noah was called to something like that. To accomplish what God has in mind as we draw closer to God, that we should also be a people who are walking and talking with God, that we should be a people who are living justly in this world. And from that relationship with God and one another, we see the vision that God has in mind for us as a community of faith. And many of us know the story of John Wesley. We know his life, his travails, what he tried to accomplish. I want to remind you of some of the early parts of his life real quickly. John Wesley, when he was at Oxford studying, gathered together with a group of young men for some particular purposes. One of them was a gathering for personal development, spiritual development and piety. They would get together, they would read, and they would study scriptures together. They would pray together. They were a group that would conference together for accountability. They would ask each other how it is with their soul and how they are pursuing daily the presence of God in their lives. But they were also a group who enacted that in their social presence as well. They would go out together to the prisons and they would serve those who were in prison. They would share with them the love of God in the gospel of Jesus Christ. They would go to the local hospitals and they would tend to those who were sick and in need of comfort and aid. They would minister at the local orphanages and they would deal with children and share love with children who had been abandoned by their families. This was their practice, their presence, Wesley and his little band of men. Long before they ever understood or conceived, they lived out the axiom that there is no personal holiness without social holiness, and there is no social holiness without personal holiness. They saw those two things as coupled hand in hand going together. And by the way, the contemporaries at Oxford had a name for this little group. Do you know what it is? Methodist. They called them the Methodist, because of the way they lived. Oh, by the way, dear friends, that was not a term of endearment. It was meant to chide. It was meant to be derisive in their understanding because they didn't think that was the way to be as a Christian in that day. And yet, Wesley had this vision, this yearning within his heart that something new as an expression of the Anglican Church might emerge, a faith community that would be involved in changing and transforming the world for God's purposes, that it be personal and that it be social in its presence. Wesley had a vision of this, but yet he could not conceive of the full picture of what God had in mind. Even though he sets out on this journey, do you think Wesley envisioned that we would be here today as a community of faith? And yet we are the current moderators of that grand vision that God passed on to John Wesley and that he initiated in him of Methodism today. A Methodism that hopefully is encouraging you, dear friends, to walk more closely with God, to be a people who live justly in the world around you, and from that, come and participate in God's grand vision before us. So here's what I hope that you hear today. Some things that you might take a hold of and remember as you go forth. To be reminded that we are all accustomed to entering into these projects and having these basic instructions that can help us accomplish these kinds of small projects and hobbies in our world. That maybe what is uncomfortable for us are the more ambiguous kinds of things, God-sized visions and dreams that we don't know how to fully accomplish on our own. God called a man named Noah to a really mighty task, a vision that maybe even Noah couldn't fully understand himself. And yet Noah was the right person for that job because he walked and talked with God and he was just in the world around him. He was an example of faithfulness for us because he set out on this task, not even knowing the full results and end of it. And that we're invited to that same kind of faithfulness in our lives, to be a people who have a personal piety and a social witness in the world around us, to be people who walk and talk with God and live justly in the world, and to understand that as we invest more deeply in these things, God will draw us nearer and closer as we participate in His vision for us, the church. So here's your invitation for you today to think about. To first maybe assess, how is it daily that you walk and talk with God? What does your daily reading and prayer life look like? Who are you accountable to for your spiritual development and growth? How are you walking and talking with God? Or how are you living justly in the world around us? What mission project has your heart and you're invested in, and you are meeting people who are in our society around us, who are the marginalized? You're connecting with them and serving in a way that also shares with them the heart of God. Or the adjustments that you're making in your own personal lifestyle to live more simply so that others might simply live. What are you doing to live justly in this world? For God has given us a tradition of faith and fine examples of wonderful faithfulness. People that we know that in their own way walked and talked with God. People who in their own way were folks who were just in the world around us. How might we take up their example? How might we?